Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
It's often said that a mother will go to the ends of the earth for the health and well-being of her children. Today, I'm talking with one mother whose mission really did take her across the globe, from Bedouin camps in the Middle East to Amish farms in Pennsylvania and villages in India. She's Christina Adams, the award-winning author of the memoir, A Real Boy. Christina's a journalist who speaks on writing, culture, autism, and camels. Yes, you heard that right. Autism and camels. And that will make perfect sense in just a few minutes. Her work's been featured by National Public Radio, The Washington Post, LA Times, Global Advances in Health and Medicine, and many more publications. She lives in Orange County, California, and joins us today to discuss her new book, Camel Crazy, A Quest for Miracles in the Mysterious World of Camels. Welcome, Christina Adams.
Thanks, Vicki. I'm so glad to be here today.
Very glad to talk with you today. The first time I'd heard about this topic, and the book covers quite a journey. But I want to begin at the beginning, and when it does begin, you're a newly separated mom. You have a seven-year-old child with autism. You take your child to a book fair in Orange County, and that turned out to be a huge turning point for you, although you didn't know it at the time. Now, the book's not about your child, but I'm just wonder if you'd share with us just a little bit about what your life was up to that point in dealing with a child with autism, what your daily biggest challenges were, and those of your child.
I'd be happy to, because a lot of people don't have any idea how all-encompassing it is when you are the mother or a parent or even an extended family member of a person with autism. So I didn't know anything about autism until my child was diagnosed, and that's fairly typical. And I managed to learn quite a bit from the people that surrounded me, mostly parents. The medical and child providers were not really that helpful, but the parents knew everything about what you could do to try to help your child. So that was the topic of my first book, A Real Boy. And that's when I learned, I kind of dove into the medical aspects, the health aspects, the dietary aspects, and of course the psychological aspects, the legal aspects. So it's quite complex because it changes everything in your life to help get your child a quality of life, to get their health better, which affects their autism symptoms, and then to help them go through school and in society. There are many barriers. So at that time, I had just gotten separated and was, looking at beginning the end of my marriage to my son's father. And when you're alone, I didn't have family around to help me here. And when you're alone with a child with autism, it's very taxing because you have to really keep your eye on them at all times. And my son, very, very bright person, very smart, very bright, and a fast mover. So it was challenging for me to even keep him alive. He could be on top of a wall in a few minutes. If I turn my head, he could be on the top of a children's play structure once, 15 feet high in the air. He could dart out and just get away from me, and that was very difficult. So, and I had to kind of prepare the special foods that he required, dairy-free and all that. So it was looking pretty tough. And so when I met this camel, it was just an accidental thing, but it did change my life in tremendous ways.
Right, right. So tell us how you met the camel. You were at a book fair and there's a camel there, but nobody's riding it. And you go up to the guy. I mean, you're a writer, you're a journalist, you're naturally curious. Thank goodness, because it led to a whole new journey for you.
Yeah. Well, that day I was just kind of bored and a little stressed because of what was in our future. And I saw that camel. And to me, at the time, it was just a camel. And looked kind of dusty, you know, even though it wasn't really particularly dusty, but they just have that caramel color that makes them look like they've been out in a farm area, and it had, but it is actually a beautiful animal. So I just looked at it, and I just thought, oh, there's a camel, but I saw a guy with a hat on, and he was selling soap and lotion made from the milk, and then I just, being that curious person, just said, well, what else do they do with the milk? And he said they give it to premature infants in hospitals in the Middle East, and it's thought to be non-allergenic, and it might be close to human breast milk. And based on all that research I just told you about a couple of minutes ago, that's when I had my light bulb moment. I thought, okay, A, we know that autism is connected to immune function, and if I get this milk, maybe it can help improve his autism symptoms, improve his speech, things like that. Reboot his immune system was my thought. And B, it could be a good dairy substitute for people that can't have regular milk, like him and lots of other people. So I went home and looked on the internet. There was nothing but some weird articles, and I kept searching, and then I found that there had been a new article about camel milk helping autistic children in Israel and those with food allergies. And boom, it set me on this journey, and I managed to reach across the world and get some frozen bottles of camel milk flown in to this country and gave it to my son, and it far exceeded my expectations of what would happen.
Right. You tried to feed him mostly a dairy-free diet. I understand that cow's milk and cheese affected him. They kind of encouraged him to walk in circles, if you will. And then vegan substitutes like rice and soy, we know they are known for causing allergic response in many people.
Correct. And it is kind of known that there's a form of casein called A1 beta casein in cow milk, and it can kind of help form this kind of peptide, so we call it, that has this kind of weird opioid effect, and that can aggravate symptoms like detachment from your surroundings, lack of interest in one's surroundings, and lowered social interaction, and those are hallmarks of autism. So for him, it was very dramatic. The loss of cow milk in his diet made him so much better. And so I already knew that, which I talk about in the first book, but the camel milk, not only did I want it as a dairy substitute, because we know that animal milks can build bone health and things in children better than others, and I also just thought maybe it'll help them. So it was those two things, and they did turn out to be true.
Yeah, and so it wasn't easy for you to get this camel's milk to even test it with your son. You had to go through, you did a lot of research. There was very little online, you say, at the time. So when you first gave it to him, there was almost an immediate difference from one day to the next. You know, some people might be a little skeptical about that. So tell us some of the differences you noticed, Christina.
Yes, and it's fine for people to be skeptical, because in the beginning, this was just my idea. But then the more I did some science investigation into it, the more it looked like it was going to at least be helpful.
Right.
Nothing else. And nothing else than extra nutritious milk. So how bad could that be? And so I did make a sort of an intellectual partnership with someone I never met until years later, but he's a cancer researcher and a brilliant man who is an Israeli-American named Dr. Amnon Gonen. And so he was in Israel, I was in California in my single mom condo by the freeway, and we would have discussions about how he knew about camel milk and, of course, the whole functioning of the human body. I knew about autism and how that impacted the human body along with diet. So we made our theory. Actually, we should technically call it a hypothesis for the science listeners. And we gave it to my son, and that's where we saw the amazing effect. And then at that time, he was really almost like patient zero. As I said, there's been a few kids in Israel that had taken it and gotten better, but that was just short term and I didn't know them.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we just went on, and I started tracking down camels and I investigated the lore. And then I had the experience of learning that there were Amish people in America who were milking camels. And then I thought, if I get this and give it to my son, maybe we'll see what happens. And I had gotten USDA permission to import camel milk for my son's autism symptoms before, but then that was always so costly and so, you know, risky. I never knew for sure it would make it, even though it did every time. So when I got the camel milk from the Amish farmers, gave it to him, it worked the same, and he was sort of the first test case to see if it's actually the camel itself that produces the factors that go into the milk's effectiveness. Before then, we didn't know, is it the special camel in Israel? Is it the feed that it eats? Is it this breed? Nope, it turns out the camel is the delivery system for its amazing milk.
Okay, that's interesting. Now, I know you say, I haven't actually tasted camel's milk myself, but it's supposed to taste just like milk. I did read in one study that I looked at that American camel milk is said to have a sweeter, slightly salty and creamier taste, while camel milk from the Middle East has a more nutty and smoky flavor. Is that your experience?
The funny thing is, I may be one of the people that have had different camel milk from different countries more than most people, which I'm privileged to do. So I have tasted it a lot of different places. It doesn't really taste that different from each other. The one thing that I do, I can always tell the taste if it's raw or pasteurized, because that does kind of, if it's pasteurized, it kind of flattens the taste a little bit. It's just less full. And I never notice particularly salty as a thing. I think that's maybe more of a desert kind of, you know, issue, depending on their state of hydration, I would estimate. So if they're super hydrated, perhaps you get less of that salt effect, but if they're out in the desert, maybe they're not. But usually it just tastes like milk. Most milks, I mean, I don't feel that it's as pronounced as a flavor as goat milk. I think it's more like cow milk. And the only time I really see differences is when, like, a camel, when different parts of the country that they come from or places. So if they're on grass or the person has a particular well access here in the United States, I can taste the difference. And it's sort of like a fine cheese. You know, you can kind of taste differences in each cheese, but not even that pronounced, just pretty subtle.
Right. So can we talk about raw versus pasteurized? Because there's always controversy around drinking raw milk of any kind. And that's one of the downsides of drinking raw camel milk, according to research that I looked at, where there's some kind of respiratory diseases that may or may not be spread from that. What's been your experience, and based on your extensive research? Because I just took a very quick glance.
Yes. So I have done tons and tons of research on this. The years, it's been about 14 years worth that you'll see in this book. Not only that, I have written some science articles. One in particular is in a medical journal article, and it helped kick off the interest in camel milk around the world, along with another one that was for the general public. And that article's been cited about 13 times now, I guess, by other researchers, and they have built on it. So that's the great part. Camel milk itself is usually one of your best milks that you can get for having antiviral and antibacterial properties. A good raw milk that's very, very clean has those properties, and camel milk perhaps even more than most. So that is all depending on the supplier. And as far as the virus you're talking about, that would be a version of a coronavirus. They think it's called MERS, but MERS is kind of controversial in that they don't really know where it comes from. They thought maybe camels are a vector, as you would say, but they really are not super sure about how that goes. It may have originated in bats, but out of caution, they generally say that you should avoid camel milk in the Middle East if it's raw and things like that. But it's still really not a very clear, clear-cut issue. And we do not have MERS in the United States. Now, in this country, we do have a patchwork of raw milk laws, and taken together, about 43 states offer some version of raw milk access. I myself am always cautious about cow and other raw milk, not to put it down or anything, but I've lived on a farm. I know how it goes. And generally, it really depends on the sanitation and the health of the animal. Camel milk itself, the animals are super clean. They're very small feces, if you want to get technical. They're not like cows, which are messy and stuff. And the animal itself is fairly disease resistant. It does have to be tested for tuberculosis, for brucellosis, and for things like that. You need to keep an eye on it. Vets can do that. So we here in the United States have been fortunate to have a lot of camel milk that is raw and pasteurized, and no one's really had an issue with it. So that's the good part.
Mm. So let's look at camels in America. You say there are at least 5,000. I was kind of surprised to see where they were located, considering where, you know, their indigenous environment. Missouri and Michigan, Pennsylvania and Colorado. So you actually went out to Pennsylvania, you visited the Amish. Tell us about that experience.
Yes, I have visited a couple times in a few farms, and I, like everybody else, I discovered, but much earlier on, that there were camels in America and where they were. And the Amish phenomenon of them milking camels is fairly recent, but they've done it for a few years now. So when I reached out to them, I mean, that in itself is kind of interesting, because at that time they didn't have websites or anything. Now most of them do, but they don't operate them. Other people do. So they prefer to be called, but sometimes it's very limited. Like there's one farmer, you can only talk to him, you know, like an hour every week, and you have to schedule it ahead of time. And then others, they answered the phone, but it's very brief, short. So my first trip, I didn't really know, like, how to dress or what to bring as a
kid
for the
right.
kids. And so that was all kind of interesting. And so I got there, and they're just as nice and polite as can be. It's really special, though, to see, like, a rural Pennsylvania landscape that you would expect to see dotted with cows, to have these great arching heads of camels in a big flock or a herd, you know, in the pasture. So that was quite an experience. And then I got to watch the milking. And then I saw that even though the legend is that milk from a camel comes within 90-second bursts, and that's to keep it as efficient nursing in a sandstorm or something, that actually it will go longer. And so in America, I'm able to time it at these different farms. And the Amish people are quite welcoming, and they themselves vary. Some of them use the camel milk themselves. Others just sell it because it's a costly product that they're producing. But they are proud of what they do. They like anything that will help keep them on the land and preserve their kind of isolated, deliberately socially isolated way of life. And they are proud to serve the community with such a healthy product. So it's super nice, and I love visiting them and talking with them.
Right. While you were out with the Amish, you say that when you got back to California, you called them to see how things were going, and you asked a question of Ben, one of the Amish men, and I'd like to throw that question back to you as a mom of an autistic son. And that question was to him as a dad, but to you as a mom, do you ever worry your child will find a mate?
Yes, I do, and we've discussed it. Now that my child is older, we have talked about it more. Now that sweet little child that I met at the Amish farm, he had some problems and he couldn't eat regular food, but the camel milk had helped keep him alive and keep him from having rejection of some problems that were provoked by his immune system. And so, yeah, I did worry about that, and I still worry about it a little bit, but it's really cool because yesterday, actually, for instance, I saw my son, he's 22. He's going to college, community college, and he's in an apartment with a roommate, and so he was looking pretty spiffy yesterday, and and I said, wow, you look pretty nice today, and he goes, well, I parted my hair this different way and all that, and I said, oh, I like how you smell, too, and he said, well, I was kind of burning this lavender incense in the apartment, and I was like, oh, that's a good cologne, and he said, well, you know, there were a couple girls on my outing today that were definitely kind of giving me the eye and some attention, so I think they like this new mustache that I have. I said, well, it's very Clark Gable. And he said, who's Clark Gable? Yeah, so he's a great guy. He says he'd like to kind of mature into some more of his skills and everything before he feels like he, you know, can offer someone enough that, you know, to have a real partnership. But he says maybe someday he'll have kids, he'd like to get married. So, I mean, I can't ask for anything better than an attitude like that.
Right. And so he's been exposed to this camel's milk for a long time now. You say in the book there's never a cure. Has have the effects of the camel milk sustained throughout this journey?
Well, for him, he had to be on it regularly, but he could, over time, go longer and longer between it. So, as you'll read about in the book, initially we gave him a certain amount, and then I played with it and I learned we could stretch it out this way and that way. But then a lot of these children with autism, they get something to eat that isn't good for them, and boom, you'll see it immediately in their behavior. And I was able to give it to them just like that, and within 15 minutes it would resolve. And in the past, I only had some digestive enzymes that would help with that, but not that great of a job. But the camel milk was awesome for that. So over the years, he has actually been able to eat regular cheese in the past couple of years, which I do not approve of. I don't want him to do that, but he is, you know, more on his own. So I can't control everything he does. When he goes out with his buddies and they're, you know, at some Denny's or someplace before they go to a movie and they're ordering stuff, the nachos sometimes come out, but it doesn't have the same bad effect on him as it did. So probably over the years, the camel milk helped a lot with that. But then even now, he will drink it when he comes to my house. I'll make him a smoothie or something, but for most people, it depends on their particular health need. So in the back of Camel Crazy, I have a user's guide, And it outlines the conditions that it works for. Now, this is not by any means inclusive. These are just a few. But I kind of give what the suggested serving amounts are. And in that, I include autism, chronic inflammation, diabetes 1 and 2, Crohn's disease, and things like that, chemo recovery. So everybody's different, but I do say you should give it a good try at first and give it on a daily basis at first, and then you can and see how it's going as the person gets better.
Yeah, and we're still learning about this. I mean, studies are coming out every day, but I think if you have a condition and nothing else is working, it's certainly worth exploring to see if it helps you.
Yes, I agree. And also, the thing is that it's a great milk. No matter what, it's an incredible top nutritional thing that you can do for yourself. So you're certainly not going to, make a mistake by just drinking some milk. And everything, like even if you have a person that doesn't agree with, which is rare, but if it does happen, you just stop drinking the milk and it's fine.
Yeah. And the milk is similar in many ways to cow's milk in the makeup, but it has certain chemical aspects that are different, and that's what we think that's what studies say make the difference, right?
Yeah, so all milks have certain things in common. All milks have insulin in them. All milks deliver antibodies to the babies. That's what they're there for. Milks are a super complex mix of powerful ingredients. I mean, this has really given me a new appreciation for milk. It's the basic substance that, builds infants into adults, be they animal or human. But camel milk is actually, it's got some of the typical things. It's got, essential fatty acids, but some of those are exceptionally good in camel milk. It's got the high level of insulin, or the similar protein, but it's survivable. We think it's survivable in the stomach because the proteins are larger and more stable. And so it seems like the immunoglobulins are better protected along with the insulin, and they seem to be intact so that they can make it throughout that digestive grind and be delivered to the body. And the milk also has really unique enzymes as far as that some of them are particularly anti-cancer, antibacterial, antioxidant in their effects. Now, I don't go around claiming, as you will know by reading my book, it's very carefully researched,
right.
And very distinct. But research-wise, it does look like there are certain things with camel milk that are very promising as far as, anti-tumor type of things. There are people out there that have had breast cancer and they drink camel milk after that and they feel that it doesn't give them a recurrence risk and all that. So that's what they say. I don't get into that. But as far as the other things about the milk, it does have things like it can help regulate dopamine and serotonin. Those are your central nervous system things, and it has GABA, and that can help kind of calm the brain in some ways. Has natural probiotics, and I really do think the immunoglobulins though were very interesting because they're super tiny and they're only found in camelids and sharks, and those are the little tiny things that can kill bacteria and viruses better than other immunoglobulins. The camel structure is very, very interesting in how it works. So it does help, it tends to in autism and other things like food allergies and failure to thrive in infants and stuff. It hits the gut and it therefore helps do some things that impact the brain and lowers inflammation, which also affects the brain. So
yeah.
We're learning more now, as you will know, about the gut-brain connection, which we in the autism community have known about for a long time. But now the science is just really pouring out lately on these things.
Yeah, it's fascinating what we're learning. And your book, as you said at the back, has a full list of resources and you cite your references and research. Let's end our conversation with a shout out to the camel since we're talking about camel's milk. 7 feet tall they stand, typically 1,000 pounds. I didn't realize they were, because they look kind of gangly and skinny, but yeah, it's up to 1,000 pounds. And one thing that made me laugh, because I had a friend who was a camel spat on her twice when we were at some festival. And you say it's actually not spit, it's vomit.
It is vomit, and as many as I've been around, it's never happened to me. I'm told that if you watch them carefully, they'll make a kind of rum rum grumbling sound and display some irritation traits. But, you know, us lay people, I'm not anymore, but I was once, we don't know what that looks like. But I've never seen it, but I have seen pictures of it. It looks quite disgusting.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things when I was taking a quick gander on the internet, there were some ethical concerns about that, and I'd like to get your input on this. The ethical concerns about bringing camels into America and farming them, if you will, for milk, were that, you know, getting them acclimated to a country that isn't natural for them, basically, and then the possibility of breeding and factory farming because their pregnancies are about 13 months long. So we know what happens when factory farms come onto the scene. Have you seen any of that, or is it still remained natural and fairly organic?
Okay, this is where I'm so glad you brought this up, because believe me, don't read most of the things you read on the internet unless
right.
you read it from me. So I hate to say that, but I mean 14 years versus a drive-by, journalistic kind of thing is different. So first of all, it's practically impossible to bring camels into this country. We haven't done it in a long, long time. It's almost impossible for different reasons, so don't anybody worry about that anytime soon unless you'd like to put a few million dollars into flying your 747 over here, setting up a quarantine site for at least 6 months, and if one turns out to be sick, you're going to lose all of them, so you might as well forget about that. Second of all, camels will not give milk if they're not happy. The females have to be bonded to the owners. They have to be in a good mood. They have to be feeling comfortable. And otherwise, you will not get the milk. So they have that protective mechanism. And camel owners, and I've even been to the big farms in the Middle East, so I've been around thousands of camels at one time. I have seen those camels, the pampered camels. They are brushed. Their sand is cleaned. They are gleaming. And they walk over to have themselves milked without even humans helping them. And you can tell if they're content or not because the lower lip shows if they're happy or not. So if their lower lip is dropped and kind of droopy, they're in a good mood. And so the babies are generally kept with the animal to help stimulate the milk. And it's very ethical. It's about the most ethical dairy farming I can imagine. So factory farming for camels, it's going to be difficult. In the Middle East, they will ramp up probably and get even bigger production, but they're treated like gold. And that's the good part. You can't treat them badly or you're not going to get anything from them. And here in America, people, and this is true worldwide, people love camels. Now, sure, there's those people out there that, you know, they are some places used for meat. They are generally killed halal style if that happens. Never pretty, these kind of things. But it's a meat animal. It's a farm animal in the other countries mostly. But here, people love them. They are in the front yards. They are listening to them at night. They are kissing them on their faces constantly. So as far as it goes, camel is about as ethical as you can get. They also take less water and less resources and less to produce milk than other animals. They are a small-scale animal that can be done sustainably in a relatively small scattered pieces of land where families can have them, as they do in other countries. And they actually are a key in some places. Women control the milk market. And a lot of these women, they don't have much in their lives. You know, they're nomadic people.
Yes, yeah.
The women get to sell the milk, and that can actually help them take care of their girl children, can help reduce the risk of trafficking, can help a lot of things for that family. So it's a very ethical form of dairy, and I feel really good about that.
Well, I'm so glad we got that cleared up. I, you know, go to the expert. That's the key thing here. The book is called Camel Crazy, A Quest for Miracles in the Mysterious World of Camels. And you can find out much more about Christina Adams and her work at ChristinaAdamsAuthor.com. And you've got some great videos up there for anyone who has children with autism. They might want to go there and check those out too, Christina.
Yes, certainly. And it's also just for people that love a good adventure. It's got fun stories. You're going to meet the wonderful pastoralist people that
and travel,
you know, around the world. And you can get it at any bookstore. And you can go to your library if you're on a budget and ask them to order it for you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you being with us, Christina.
Yes, my pleasure. Thank you.
And again, the website, ChristinaAdamsAuthor.com. And thank you for being with us today. We appreciate you spending this time with us. We'll see you next week. Until then, live well, live strong. You can find out more about us at conversationslive.net.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.